You have a broken guitar? Don't fret. Take the scenic drive to Fort Atkinson to Jeff's Guitar Clinic. We'll have you fretting your guitar in no time at all. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic, we love guitars.
And welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. Joining us today from the Alliance for American Manufacturing, our friend Scott Paul. Scott, welcome to the podcast and show.
Hey, Sly. It's great to be with you.
Well, it's an interesting time period, and I have a lot of questions for you because there's a lot going on that's going to determine whether the United States and Wisconsin continue their decline in manufacturing or whether we stem this tide. And I think it's still kind of a question that's up in the air, isn't it?
I agree. Yeah, I think it's way too early to know whether any policy interventions are going to bear fruit. And, you know, it's also way too early to know, you know, kind of where the economy and other things that politicians can't control are headed at this point. You know, a lot of people concerned about it, doing work on it, and clearly the administration has been at least making some noise about it. So, you know, I'm hopeful that some of this will turn into progress, but we have a long way to go.
All right, here's one thing that made me a little concerned when it comes to dealing with China.
Does it send a message to North Korea?
I don't know if this sends a message. It doesn't make any difference if it does or not. North Korea is a problem. The problem will be taken care of. I will say this. I think China has really been working very hard. I have really gotten to like and respect, as you know, President Xi. He's a terrific person. We spent a lot of time together in Florida, and he's a very special man. So we'll see how it goes. I think he's going to try very hard.
All right. So we heard throughout the campaign in 2016 that China was a currency manipulator. Now the Treasury Department in the Trump administration says they don't meet the criteria for currency manipulation in Section 3004 of the Omnibus Trade and Competitive Act of, I don't know, whatever year it was. Your thoughts on that?
I think it was the wrong call. The body of evidence, if you look over time in particular, is that Chinese currency manipulation has been an issue, regardless of what they've been doing maybe the last couple of weeks or the last couple of months. And just take a step back, because this is the thing that, you know, I hear pundits talking about this and how some realism was injected into this.
You know, the pundits love that.
Yeah. When has this currency report ever been grounded in reality? I mean, Obama didn't cite China as a currency manipulator 16 times, even though they clearly were. George, you know, W. Bush never cited China as a currency manipulator, even though, you know, even the most kind of like free market economists would say, yeah, clearly China was manipulating their currency. And so it's never been really what you would call a fact-based exercise, Sly. So for people to heap praise on Trump to do this, you know, people, by I mean the pundits, it strikes me as a little bit both ironic and hypocritical. And I do, you know, the other piece of this, and I'm glad you played that clip, is that this reminds me of the remark that George W. Bush made about Putin, you know, how he looked into his eyes and saw, you know, it's like...
It was love.
I think that you have to treat China as what they are. It's certainly an economic competitor, probably a strategic competitor. I don't know how you can give them the benefit of the doubt. And for a guy who likes to make deals, he got really played here. You know, China hadn't made a move on North Korea, and then, you know, gets a concession without having to do much at all. Like they abstained on some UN votes on Syria or whatever, but really, what kind of a message does that send? It's like, okay, we're going to be recalcitrant, we'll get a concession from the Trump administration, and then we'll take a baby step forward.
Is this a sign that Mr. Cohen and maybe Donald Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, are wielding more influence as opposed to Steve Bannon?
The currency decision strikes me very much as being the Treasury Department, which is, you know, Steven Mnuchin, who comes from the investment banking world as well, Gary Cohn, Jared Kushner, absolutely, that was the principal, and throw in the foreign policy folks too, as well, that it was clearly a decision that was very much colored by their point of view on this, and the nationalist wing did not appear to win out in this particular case.
So had the United States labeled China as a currency manipulator, what would have happened?
So a number of things could happen. There could be potential sanctions levied against China. I would say, quite honestly, these are pretty mild sanctions, like they wouldn't be eligible for certain types of U.S. aid, and China doesn't receive much of that. But it could also trigger some potential tariffs down the road, or other sorts of penalties. The president has some discretion in that respect, but we're obviously not headed down that road. And from my perspective, the decision pretty much gives China a green light and a wink to know that whatever they want to do on monetary policy, we're going to be okay with, even if there still is a persistently high trade deficit with China, which is what the situation we're in right now.
Well, throughout the campaign in 2016, President Trump said that he made his ties, he made some of his other garments and items overseas because China was a currency manipulator. Does that mean he's going to bring those jobs home?
Yeah, well, that's the Trump Organization sourcing is something I doubt very much is going to change.
Because you never want Brian Williams as a guest in your hotel when he's got a microphone in his hand. I mean, Brian Ross. Excuse me.
ABC News Investigation.
Yeah, let me play a clip of this for you.
Before a cheering crowd at a Wisconsin factory today, the president signed an executive order to tighten requirements that federal agencies buy America.
The policy of our government is to aggressively promote and use American-made goods.
But it's a concept that Donald Trump, as a shrewd businessman, regularly ignored, including at his new crown jewel, the hotel he opened in Washington.
So welcome to my room, 445, which is a king deluxe.
When I checked in right after the election, the room was full of non-American-made products.
Here in the marble and gold bathroom, the soap is made in Canada. The towels were made in India. This fancy bathrobe, it's made in China.
Ties are made in China.
Trump has long tried to laugh off the fact that so many of his branded products were not manufactured in the USA.
Where are the shirts made? Bangladesh.
Well, it's good. We employ people in Bangladesh.
As a candidate, Trump claimed to David Muir he couldn't find American companies to make the products he needed.
The Trump ties are made in China, the Trump suits in Mexico, Trump furniture in Turkey, Trump barware in Slovenia.
It's true. And you know why? Because they devalue their currencies and they make it impossible for companies to compete.
Are there people that sell reasonably priced items in the United States, clothing that's made in America?
Yes. Yes. The hypocrisy of this. So let's just look at ties. Brooks Brothers, a company that has been in the United States since the early 1800s and that has outfitted a number of presidents, including Abraham Lincoln, makes ties about a stone's throw from the Trump Tower in New York City. They make them over in Queens and Long Island City, and they have been for a very long time. And they're nice ties, I think suitable for a business environment, very very friendly, very business friendly. I think very Trump White House friendly, you know, from appearances. But yeah. So somehow he hasn't been able to figure that out. I would say, you know, furniture. There are plenty of examples. Sly, we stocked our whole office full of American-made furniture. We found there were different price points. It's, you know, it's even available on, you know, websites like Crate and Barrel. They have imports as well, but it's not all that hard to do if it's something that you want to do and is kind of a core value of your company or you as an individual.
Yeah, I sleep on a mattress made right in Wisconsin. I wish it was union made, but I can't. I guess you can only push it so far.
We'll get there.
Right.
We'll get there.
The trade deficit with China continues to grow?
It does. It's leveled off the first couple of months of the year, which is always impacted by the Lunar New Year, where China's production shuts down for a little bit of time. But it's still high. Last year it approached $350 billion, and you know it's still in the $25 billion per month range. And so yeah, that has not gone away. That is not a problem that we have solved. And you know, unless there is some intervention on currency over the long haul, and then dealing with just the array of market distorting practices that the Chinese government deploys, and until we get our own strategy as well on how we're going to make things and invest in workers, it's going to be hard to bring it down.
So is that the number one thing that this administration could have done, is labeled China a currency manipulator?
I think that there are a couple of things that they can and should do, and I'll be, you know, I'll be forthright here. I think that, you know, in investigating kind of steel trade, I think that they may be making some progress. We'll see on that. But I will take a step back and say, from a macro perspective, you're never going to solve the China trade challenge unless you get better currency alignment. China is still, you know, it has problems with the transparency of its currency. It's not a fully functioning market. But at the end of the day, until China's currency gains a lot of value, we're going to have these persistently high trade deficits.
Yeah, China fails the six key tests for being a free market economy, doesn't it?
It does, which are laid out by the Commerce Department, and it's really easy to just stamp no next to all of that. It requires not much thought at all. From a technical perspective on the currency manipulation, you know, people can say, well, you know, their foreign reserve inflows have turned to outflows, and you know, they can cite different things, but the bottom line is that, you know, generally an indication of a currency being out of whack is a really high trade surplus or really high trade deficit. And in the case of China, there's no doubt that the currency still has a ways to go.
Are you concerned that the Trump administration is essentially using the North Korea problem as an excuse not to deal with China?
Look, I obviously, you know, think that we always have to take the threat of what's happening in North Korea pretty seriously. I also think that there are plenty of ways to work around it, to work around the issue of trying to not, I guess, inflame tensions with China. I mean, just something that Trump just signed also an executive order on national security concerns related to steel that's very much directed at China. It will be more limited in scope than something on currency, but I think it's quite possible to do that. And you know, for an administration that really rejected the notion coming in, you know, this is during the campaign and the transition, that workers should be pawns in our foreign policy game, you know, this is an about face.
Scott Paul with us from the Alliance for American Manufacturing at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
And we're back with Scott Paul from the Alliance for American Manufacturing. what is going on with these, with the investigation having to do with China and the dumping of steel?
So over time, there have been actually dozens of cases filed U.S. industry with the support of the United Steelworkers. And as a result of these cases, within our own domestic framework here in the United States, there have been considerable tariffs that have been applied to a lot of different types of Chinese steel over the last couple of years. Still, there's a problem because China has more steel than it knows what to do with. We make about 80 million metric tons of steel in the United States. Our overall steel market, because of imports, is over 100 million metric tons. China's overcapacity in steel is four or five times that much. So, and that's just the stuff that they don't use. And so that has a real impact on our market, which can impact the kinds of steel that are produced domestically that would be available for things like armored personnel carriers, battleships, tanks, you know, things we hope we never have to use, but we have to be prepared to use. And so the challenge is that, is that are there additional steps that can be taken to ensure that we are averting layoffs in the steel sector in the United States and that we're able to make this steel that's used for national security reasons in addition to other reasons as well. And so I think that we do need to look beyond dumping cases as to what other type of strategies that we can deploy. I think that Leo Girard of the steel workers and the steel companies made a persuasive case to the administration that they ought to pursue a new angle here, in addition to the dumping cases, and we'll see if that bears fruit.
When there's an investigation like this by the Commerce Department, does the United States have to make the case with the World Trade Organization, or is this something that we can do on our own?
Yeah, we should be able to do it on our own. And there, this law with respect to national security concerns, it's called Section 232. It's been in place since 1962. It's been invoked on occasion with oil, with machine tools, with some other types of products in the past. And the WTO should give wide berth to the United States because we're citing national security concerns here. There's actually exceptions provided by the WTO for that. However, Sly, I will say that the WTO has also, through its appellate body, which is a group of judges that looks at appeals of WTO decisions, really overreached in terms of its scope and has ruled against the United States in a number of dumping cases. And so I wouldn't be surprised if another nation would challenge this. And by the way, this investigation that you refer to is an investigation. It hasn't resulted in any tariffs or other types of restrictions on imports.
We
have a long way to go in this process.
We have a lot to do to repair the infrastructure of the United States. Wisconsin is in terrible shape as far as bridges and roads. I know there was a big debate about whether there was an American steel provision in the manufacture of the pipeline for the Keystone pipeline. I got very confused. Some people said that when Trump said that he demanded that there be U.S. steel for that, he was fibbing, that there really wasn't a provision in there for that. What happened with that? And what do you see happening with American steel being used and American products being used for this infrastructure that they're talking about funding at some point?
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack here. So first on the energy pipelines, you know, the oil, natural gas pipelines. Yeah, one of the first executive orders that the administration signed was we're going to use American steel in our energy pipelines, even though those are owned by private companies and investors. They're permitted by the federal government, but they're actually purchased by these utility companies. So, or energy companies. And he certainly inferred that even the existing pipelines, the Keystone and the Dakota, which are very much, you know, points of controversy today, that those would be American steel. I mean, he said this pretty consistently, or at least drew inferences to it. However, the White House did say through a spokesperson, not through Donald Trump, but through a spokesperson several weeks ago, that it would not apply to the Keystone pipeline, and that this plan being developed for American-made steel and pipelines will be start with a report by the Commerce Secretary that should be due sometime this summer.
Although I'm not holding my breath on that Keystone pipeline being built with oil prices what they are. I think it's going to be a long time before they actually need it.
Yeah, I think you could be right about that. And speaking of pipelines we do need with our water infrastructure, I should mention that Senator Tammy Baldwin from Wisconsin has been a leader in the congressional effort to try to get to improve our Buy America laws when it comes to our water infrastructure. Not all of the water infrastructure spending that we have in the U.S. now is subject to those Buy America laws, and Tammy Baldwin's trying to close that loophole and encourage the Trump administration to support her efforts.
Well, it was really amazing. The other day, Donald Trump came to Kenosha in southeast Wisconsin and signed a couple provisions. Let me play a couple clips here.
That does the same. The Buy and Hire American order I'm about to sign will help protect workers and students like those of you in the audience today. This historic action declares that the policy of our government is to aggressively promote and use American-made goods and to ensure that American labor is hired to do the job. It's America first. You better believe it.
All right.
It's time. It's time, right? It's time.
Then he said this.
We will fully monitor, uphold, and enforce our Buy American laws, which we haven't done. Buy American laws require that when the federal government buys, bills, or funds a project, domestic goods and products should be used. But over the years, these Buy American standards have been gutted by excessive waivers and reckless exemptions. The result has been countless jobs and countless contracts that have been lost to cheap, subsidized, and low-quality foreign goods. With this order, I'm directing every single agency in our government to strictly uphold our Buy American laws, to minimize the use of waivers, and to maximize Made in America content in all federal projects.
All right. First of all, I have to tell you, the setting at Snap-on Tools, the president was surrounded by some of the most vociferous free traders in the world, including Scott Walker, who's lieutenant governor, Ron Johnson, who, of course, used the term creative destruction. You remember that. It was Paul Ryan's district. He was overseas, but he's one of the biggest free traders ever. And then there's the state legislature in Wisconsin that time and time and time have voted down state provisions for Buy American. As a matter of fact, our assembly speaker, Robin Voss, said that's picking winners and losers. But there they were standing up next to Donald Trump, applauding him as they made those remarks. It was pretty amazing.
My jaw dropped, and when I saw Ron Johnson there, I was like, the wrong senator's there. It should be Tammy Baldwin. But here's an interesting thing, Sly. Even though Paul Ryan obviously wasn't there, and that this was in Kenosha at a firm Snap-on, I don't know how much Buy America business they have, but I guess the symbolism was interesting, and I think that Trump has a relationship with the CEO, Nick Pinchuk, but Paul Ryan, not only is he a free marketeer, he stood in the way of applying Buy America to more water infrastructure spending last December. And Trump,
I remember that.
At that time, did not intervene, and it was very disappointing to Senator Baldwin and others. And by the way, I'm mentioning Senator Baldwin. This is a bipartisan effort. There's a lot of folks who are engaged in this as well. And so, the hope is that I hope that this would at least loosen up some of Ryan's concerns and opposition about this, because going back to infrastructure, just for a second here, you can have all the Buy America laws in the world, but unless you're actually investing in your infrastructure, it's not going to create a job. Buy America is not going to create a job. You need to invest the money to make that happen as well.
Let me ask you finally about this situation with this president, and is Rick Wilson, the political consultant, said that there are times where the president has the attention span of a gnat on meth. So it's sometimes a little hard to tell. It's a little hard to tell exactly what he's going to do. But with NAFTA, renegotiating NAFTA or dealing with any of these other trade deals, what are people saying behind the scenes about the Republican Congress? I can't imagine Paul Ryan just rolling over for Donald Trump and renegotiating NAFTA to Steve Bannon's approval.
Right. This is interesting, because the tact that the NAFTA supporters in Congress have been taking is that, okay, the agreement is, about 25 years old. We have smartphones now. We didn't then. There's lots of different things going on. So sure, it makes sense to modernize and update it, but I think that the way in which they view it is, those free traders, is that they want to get even more of their agenda inserted into this effort, which is certainly not what progressives want to see through a NAFTA renegotiation. And I will say that it is completely unclear to me what the Trump administration wants to see in a NAFTA renegotiation, because they have not issued any formal guidance on what it is. But, there is just like on China, the rhetoric on NAFTA during the campaign was, it's a terrible deal, we're going to rip it up. Since then, has that shifted? And how much influence does that kind of the foreign policy and the corporate economic wing of the Trump administration, how much influence are they going to exert throughout this process, as opposed to the much needed repairs that need to be made?
Well, it's going to be interesting to watch. I know there are a lot of people that are really hoping that there's one area where people could work in a bipartisan way, and I've heard it mentioned by more than one member of Congress that they, as much as they disagree with Donald Trump on other issues and actually personally find him distasteful, that if he tackles some of these things, they want to work with him.
Yeah, and that's where I think a lot of our friends are too, like, Senator Sherrod Brown and Senator Tammy Baldwin. I had the chance to talk to her just a couple of weeks ago, and she said that she caught the president's attention for a few seconds, mentioned her bill on Buy America, and he indicated some sort of interest in it. We'll see if that's backed up by action. I think that's the key for all of these issues, is that, whatever is put into motion, it has to result in real meaningful change for working people.
Well, you look at people like labels, but if you look at the Democrats that are in states where Donald Trump won, or more conservative states, whether it be Senator Donnelly of Indiana, Senator Manchin of West Virginia, Senator Casey of Pennsylvania, Senator Tester of Montana, obviously Tammy Baldwin is very progressive in Wisconsin. They're all pretty good on these issues of being opposed to these corporate, Russ Feingold always calls them corporate handshakes as opposed to free trade. But most of those conservative Democrats are pretty good on this issue.
They are, by and large. I mean, I think that they've been, and that's a testament to I think both the grassroots efforts, because some of these states have a labor presence, but as you know, Sly, some don't have much of a labor presence. Whether it's the family farmers or others who have been able to touch those senators, I think that's been key. It also shows kind of the widespread impact that unfair trade and these policies have had on communities across the country, because even in those rural states, you know, as you know, Sly, there are factories in these small
towns.
That is
correct.
And when they disappear, it has an irreparable impact on that community and affects families both inside and outside of manufacturing, which is why we talk about it and want to do something about it.
Scott Paul from the Alliance for American Manufacturing, thanks for coming to Sly'sOffice.com today.
Sly, it's great. Thanks for having me, sir.
All right. You have a great day.
Sly'sOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
You know, we work hard every day. In mills and mines, hospitals and schools, in office buildings, pharmacies and shipyards, factories and forests, in squad cars, ambulances and taxicabs. We do all kinds of jobs in Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, and all across the United States and Canada. We build the things that build our country. We do things that keep our country going, support our families and our communities. We have the courage to stand up even when no one else does. We have the strength to fight for what's right, for our families and for yours. We're your friends, your neighbors, your sisters and brothers. We're more than 1 million members strong. We stand in solidarity with workers in every continent on the globe. We're the United Steelworkers Union, and every day we fight for you. Please join our fight. Visit usw.org or like us at facebook.com/steelworkers.